get step, kick, kick, deep, kick, touch. I get step, kick, kick, deep, kick, touch. I get step, kick, kick, deep, kick, touch. I get step, kick.
Tom Rowan tells us a chorus line is arguably one of the most popular and successful American musicals of all time.
Got it? Going on, and turn, turn, touch down, back step, pivot step, walk, 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 right.
It opened in 1975 and won 9 Tony Awards, the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, and a slew of other awards. In 1983, it broke the record as the longest-running show in Broadway history, a distinction it held for 14 years. 10 different touring companies have crisscrossed the nation and more, and the show has been translated into over 20 languages and produced all over the world. A hit Broadway revival in 2006, which ran for 2 years, and its subsequent tours revived interest in the show, and today it is nearly always on stage somewhere. What's the appeal, Tom Rowan asks, of this unique musical, and how has it so thoroughly captured and held the imagination of the American public? Well, he contends the show plays directly into dreams and values that are deeply rooted in the American psyche. The idea of an audition, a competition, a group of people risking it all for a job to prove they're the best, has long been a central trope in our culture. It's one of the reasons Americans are so obsessed with sports or beauty pageants. Bjork Lee has referred to A Chorus Line as the first reality show. And indeed, the explosion in the 1990s and 2000s of competition-based reality TV programs fed into that same American obsession with Cinderella stories, the every man or woman putting him or herself on the line for a chance at a dream, being judged a winner or a loser. Anyone who's ever gone on a job interview can identify with the auditionees fighting for an opportunity to do what they love. And let's admit it, once in a while, we all like, if only vicariously, to be the judge as well, the one actually making the selections. A Chorus Line gave us a chance to root for the underdog, to choose our favorites, and then hold our breath till we found out who got the job, and weep for those who didn't. Current television shows like American Idol, The Voice, America's Got Talent, Dancing with the Stars, and so forth satisfy those same deep-seated needs. There have even been a few, such as the British, How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria, and the American Grease, You're the One That I Want, where the prize was an actual role in a West End or Broadway musical. A closer look, though, reveals that A Chorus Line is something subtler, something deeper than this, perhaps even slyly subversive. Dancers in the show have expressed indignation at the existence of programs like You're the One That I Want. The implication that anybody off the street could be a Broadway star seems to negate the years of discipline and self-sacrifice and grueling, expensive training real dancers commit to in pursuit of their goals. After all, the 17 auditionees standing on that white line are not competing for a shot at stardom or celebrity, as the show's finale makes clear. They're asking for a chance to dance in a uniform, anonymous kick line behind a star. It's love of the work itself that drives them, not any misplaced desire for wealth or the proverbial 15 minutes of fame. Somewhere in there can perhaps be seen a metaphorical critique of the American dream. Do we chase success by competing to be as much like everybody else as possible?
One smile and suddenly nobody else will do.
The show is a product of the mid-70s, and creator Michael Bennett said he was partially inspired by the negative example of the Watergate scandal. Americans had discovered lying and corruption at the highest levels of government. What they were hungry for was truth and honesty. What made A Chorus Line unique in its time were the openness and integrity that the young dancers brought to the game. Called on to reveal their hopes and dreams, the traumas and disappointments and struggles they had experienced growing up, they did so with what was then, especially for a Broadway musical, unprecedented honesty and stark frankness, not to mention an engaging humor. It's a very funny show as well. Just as important, it's all done with remarkable economy of means. As original cast member Priscilla Lopez expressed in the book, On the Line, people talk about how powerful the childhood stories are, but what registers with me is how it looks. You're in blackness, in a black hole, standing on a very narrow white line, talking into nothingness to this anonymous voice. There's nothing to hold on to. How much more vulnerable can one be? The show hits the vulnerability in everyone. Indeed, the uniquely stripped-down style of the show, its elegantly streamlined look, the sleek power of the choreography, and the driving, almost non-stop musical score all combine to express those universal themes through a uniquely thrilling aesthetic experience. That from Thomas Rowan in A Chorus Line, FAQ. To mark the 50th anniversary of A Chorus Line, the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre will present a full production of this award-winning Broadway musical running this weekend and next. We had a visit from David Parmalee, who is general manager of the theater, and Jordan Liparini, who is stage director. They came to talk to us about the long tradition of musicals at the Little Theater and this production.
Here we are in our 104th season, and it is just a lesson in how time flies. We spent so much time together talking about the 100th, the centenary season, and that's a continuous production. There aren't too many theaters who've been staging shows continuously for 100 years. And I've looked at programs from World War II. You know, they were doing patriotic programming. Thank heavens during the 72 flood that people my age remember, we were above all that. So it has never stopped. And here we go again. And we start every season traditionally in the last decade or so. And this is Scott Collin, our artistic director, loves this tradition with a play. And as we call it, our Winter Heavy. And it's something dark, you know, and we just finished One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest at Misericordia University while we were having some repairs done. Well, here we are coming into the spring, the robins are here, etc., and we normally do a very powerful, upbeat musical. Last year, Jesus Christ Superstar, this year, A Chorus Line.
And I think that people would be surprised that you could find that many fine dancers to make a commitment, and it's quite a surprise that you all have found those dancers.
Well, that is the story, not only of the show, of the plot of the show, but also of our production. When we sat down, we have a gathering, again, with Scott, our artistic director, to put the season together, and we know we're going to do a comedy, a tragedy, and some musicals. But which ones? And there are so many shows you can do. I mean, the musical comedy was invented in the 1930s. I mean, there's so many of them out there, contemporary, classic. And Brooke Taluba, who's on our board, said, you know what? She's a dancer and a choreographer. She said, when there's a really good dancer, they often don't play a character that has a name. They're in the ensemble. There may be dance captain, which is an honor, but they're there to make sure the whole ensemble dances as well as it possibly can. But could we do a show where dancers are featured in the principal roles? And of course, A Chorus Line, that's what it's all about. So Scott went and put a whole bunch of poker chips on that bet saying, can we get the dancers? And of course, we knew there are so many good ones out there. We crossed our fingers and said, let's see what happens. And that's where Jordan came in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And when you're talking about power, too, you're talking about trifecta of acting, singing, and dancing. And there isn't many shows that show that. I mean, you have shows like Cats that have such a big ensemble. And it's the same experience where you give the dancers a spot to be outside of the ensemble and to be that name and to really show that as the standout of the trifecta. And to host a process that almost resembles the show itself in hosting a audition process, a follow-up audition, and a callback, and holds the emphasis and the emotion that the show does too. It really sets you up for success within placing this talent, which you can't ask for more, really.
And what drew you to make the commitment to the production?
Well, I've been in theater since 2013, which is, that's 13 years of dedication. I've had a couple years of ballet, a couple years of jazz as well. Not well trained, but enough to encompass the passion that dancing gives. And in musical theater as well, you get to tell the story outside of lines, outside of singing too. You get to convey it with your body and your passion. And then this show is something I've always been attached to. Actually, the first time I ever saw it was with our artistic director, Scott. He played Zach in this role. So it was a full circle moment when he offered me the role of director. And just hearing it from him was a really nice full circle moment. I've always had that sort of attachment to dancing and this show. And it's really nice to be able to give that passion to actors for them to give it to the audience.
David, tell us about the development of the show originally.
It was something very new. I just had my 50th high school reunion. That's how old I am. And, of course, we're happy to be here, right? But the show is 50 years old, premiered in 1975, ran for over 6,000 performances before it closed. Longest-running show on Broadway for decades, held that record. And it was conceived by Michael Bennett, who was director and originator of the idea. And they actually workshopped the show. It didn't have a finished script. Put his cast together. Of course, he was one of the premier dancers and choreographers. And they would come up with different endings when they did it. The whole idea is it's 17, Jordan, or 18 dancers auditioning?
17.
There you go.
9 girls, 8 guys.
For 8 roles.
Yeah.
So, as David Mamet said, the conflict in every drama is, what does our hero want? What happens if they don't get it? And why now? Well, here the answer is obvious, as in many shows about Broadway or about theater, it's that incredibly competitive life where every few weeks, maybe, you've got to get a new job. And here are these dancers all, of course, desperately wanting the job. But we don't know who the hero is.
No.
They all have different stories. We root for them all in different ways. And Bennett, when he was interviewed about it, he said they worked through it where they would allow different dancers at the end of each workshop session to get the parts, and nobody liked it. They all said, no, this woman should get it because she did the best. There was a sort of meritocracy that emerged, and that's how it ended up being staged. But that's what it's about, is that extremely competitive world of trying to make a living in the arts, which he knew so well. And of course, music by Marvin Hamlisch, who at the time was king of popular music. Just incredible score, right?
Incredible.
We know the songs.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of hits, and a lot of them are lost also in title. There's so many that are just titled montage 1 through 4 that carries 3 songs in some of them, and you miss out on some of the great names that are known, well known songs that hit you in that moment of nostalgia when you're just listening to it. And like, I can't believe that wasn't on the pamphlet that I'm here. It's something to look forward to.
Jordan, you're the stage director, and yet this is such a dance-heavy show. How are you working with the choreographer? How does that balance take place?
Well, first off, this is unlike most anything I've ever been a part of in terms of blocking. It's been a spectacle to see and something to really think on outside of practice, because normally you go and you set up practices set around blocking, then you fit in the music rehearsals and then the dance rehearsals too, or vice versa. And this is a really interesting process to be a part of, where primary rehearsals are all choreography. And I'm working to fit in my blocking here and there. Working with Brooke as a choreographer has been, everything I could have imagined. She has gone above and beyond to reach and exceed my expectations. I reach a milestone and I think, okay, well, maybe we can add this. She's like, one step ahead of you. I have this to show you already, and we're going to work this into our group next. It's really been quite the sight to see and something to be a part of. I can't wait to see this all on its feet.
David, you said A Chorus Line was something new at the time, the concept by Michael Bennett. Is there much of a plot? It's certainly different from the next show in your season, Pillow Talk.
Oh, very different. Yes, that's a very traditional comedy, a bit of a screwball comedy, a whole lot of fun. And that's going back even farther. Pillow Talk is 1959. But by 1975, Broadway had changed tremendously. And a lot of people point to Cabaret, perhaps, Sweet Charity. Some of the shows in the early 60s to the 70s, they look at Sondheim. They look, obviously, at Bob Fosse. You know, and this is a show that kind of came out of nowhere, I think, but was a result of that, of the license to improvise, to create, to build shows from an idea rather than a traditional Broadway formula. Would you agree?
I would agree. And you were talking about power earlier.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get much power than something deriving from subjective human experience.
Yes.
Which is not something you get from every other original Broadway show about a story, and that antagonist, the protagonist, as you said before too, it's, you know, you find something to love in everybody because it feels so close to human nature.
Yes. And there's a couple of these. The one guy or gal wanting to become a star and making it, or they're going back to Allentown. God forbid, Allen. It could be worse.
Right.
But this is not about one person trying to be a star. This is about people trying to get a job.
Right.
For crying out loud. We know they can do it. They have the talent. They've taken the lessons. They're dedicating themselves to the point where they're willing to be unemployed a lot of the time. And all they want is a job. And they're from where? Tempe, Arizona, Vermont.
All over.
Couple from New York.
Yeah.
And the whole point is not the dancer. We know what that's all about. Who is that person and why are they dancing? What is it that leads them to give up so much that most of us sort of expect, like steady income, for this job, for this thing that they pursue? And that's, I think, what the audience is allowed to glimpse into that world.
And why does Zach, who is directing, make the dancers tell their stories? Is that standard procedure?
From my experience, not so much. It's more of a fundamental, you know, where have you come from? How well do you do what you're doing? And I think the special thing about Zach is him finding himself throughout all of this still. You know, he has a story to tell as well. And amongst all of the years that he's been doing this, he's still trying to find something more out of it and trying to find something more out of the people that he gets for it. So drawing everybody's human experience, as I said before, drawing everybody's original story to figure out how well they can work as the one. You know, you find their one individual personality and how they fit into a chorus if they could leave that all behind. And, you know, you win some, you lose some. Only 8 people make it. And you find those people in the story that you never know until the end, really, who could fit that line.
Help us understand the tension between the need to blend into a uniform line. Zach doesn't want anyone to catch his eye as the chorus line backs up the lead. And yet we've heard each one's story and know them as an individual.
For that, I would go to one of the most impactful songs in the show, which is What I Did for Love. You are led with this hugely emotionally moving blocking number, essentially. It's a piece-to-piece buildup of everybody's thoughts. It's essentially a collection piece of everybody finally coming together and realizing that all of this is worth it because there's nothing better that they'd rather do.
Kiss today goodbye. The sweetness and the sorrow. Wish me luck the same to you. But I can't regret what I did for love, what I did for love. The gift was ours to borrow. It's as if we always knew. And I won't forget what I did for love, what I did for
That means then, when we hear one, they've come together and they are one bonded ensemble.
Essentially, yeah. They're Zach's one, they're their own one. The story is ironically written about the one person, often referred to as a he or a she. It is the experience that they're going through as the one.
As the audience for this show, we experience the process just as we might do if we stopped in at the little theater tonight as you all rehearse.
Yeah, the expression in theater is the fourth wall, which of course is the invisible, non-existent wall between the audience and what's going on stage. And of course, it's very popular to write theater about theater. There's a whole lot of stuff written about things that happen on stage. But this is one of them, and in a very odd way, the radio play of It's a Wonderful Life that we did last Christmas is similar too, that you're watching the sausage being made, as it were. You know, you're sitting visually watching a performance in the radio play's case of radio actors and the little quirks about how that craft is done, including making the sound effects with strange things that you wouldn't expect would be that sound effect. And here you are as an audience watching not the finished product, which is what you're supposed to see, but the creation of the product. If you look at a group like the Rockettes, you know, everybody has to look pretty much the same. They have to be within, I think, a couple of inches of height. Of course, they dress the same. And the idea is that it's this perfect human machine creating this expected effect. And by the time you go to Radio City to see that Christmas show, you got what you paid for. And the same with any Broadway product. I mean, they're so good at what they do. But here we are with that fourth wall watching, how do they get there? How is that done? And it's not always smooth, is it? And of course, the humanity behind it can sometimes be tragic.
Let's go back to that moment when Scott invited you to direct a chorus line, Jordan. You were thrilled, but that meant that you'd actually have to hold auditions yourself so you could find the dancers. Tell us a bit about the way you conducted those auditions.
Well, it was very dance-focused. There wasn't a single day that went of auditions without seeing everybody dance and getting what we needed from them, essentially. I wish I could say it was as high stakes as the show's auditions make it, but it wasn't exactly the meat and potatoes that Chorus Line gives us. You know, I have the passion, but I don't have the history and the experience that Zach has that he conveys in the show. So I think that it was the perfect amount to get across what we needed from the actors in the time. And I think we really lucked out with some of the talent that came out for this.
David, you're always so good in putting things into historical perspective. A Chorus Line is marking its 50th anniversary, as you tell us. Does it really hold today?
I think amazingly it does. Certainly theater has changed so much. New York has changed so much, etc. But we thought, well, this one is maybe a little dusty. As popular as it was, perhaps a lot of people who are quite young wouldn't really have any knowledge of it. But I was just so delighted to see very young people coming out to be in it. And we hope that a range of ages will come to see it.
Yeah, I could second that. I think that this will, especially in the area that we live in, I think that this will touch the hearts of people all across the age spectrum. I think that this will generate a lot. And not only kind of the new pop the show has gotten from its 50th anniversary, I just think that it's hidden and coming out in a time that is so important right now of needing to understand the importance of dropping down the self-importance and opening it up to the greater importance of unity and coming together for a greater purpose.
And you're very 70s oriented with it.
Yeah.
You are committed to bringing that Chorus Line that people fell in love with then back to the stage.
Yeah, I think that's very important. Aside from the notes in the show that hit certain beats, you know, that can always be altered. You know, they talk about the Spanish Harlem in New York, right. And they talk about the unemployment rise and the fall of Broadway, the brief stints that cause emotional conflict. But keeping it true to its time, I think, is something people often get scared of in theater nowadays, especially in the community. I think that it's really easy to create a take that is modern to appeal to a younger audience. But I think encapsulating it in the time and trying to build off of that and not making it super caricature-y is important to understand why things reoccur and to understand the importance of how history returns with Broadway, with New York. You know, these things are always happening, and it's important that we learn from them when they come back again. And I think that encapsulating a show in the time period that it's meant to be does exactly that. It resonates the original feelings.
And when you think about it, there's no art form, I think, I could probably be proven wrong on this, but certainly very few, that are tied to the fate of one metropolitan area. Like, Broadway is its own form of art. What do you listen to? Do you like folk? Do you like rock? No, I listen to Broadway.
Right.
You
know, it's
its own musical style. It's its own industry. I mean, people know about it, but where do you go see it? Well, okay, there are touring shows, but it's Broadway. And it goes up and down with a lot of things. The mood of the public, the economy, what's happening in New York City. Boy, is it its own breed of cat, isn't it? And nothing says Broadway like this show.
No, I can agree. I think that this is amongst a lineup of shows that really hit it home. Original Broadway, you know,
right.
that New York feel. You can almost close your eyes and see it when you listen to the soundtrack over.
Back when taxi cabs were not Toyota Priuses, you know, they were...
Yes.
They were checker cabs. You know, there's a bit of nostalgia there for things that maybe were not so great at the time, but New York nostalgia, Broadway nostalgia, 50 years longer ago than I imagine it was.
How and when can we see A Chorus Line?
Can I do the most important part?
Take
we changed
away.
Our curtain time. Yeah, I don't know if it's been all 104 years, but it certainly has been many, many years. Fridays and Saturdays, we always started at 8. Not anymore. People have been asking, could we go a little sooner? So we moved the starting time back to 7:30, and this is our first show with a 7:30 start on Fridays and Saturdays. The matinee on Sunday didn't seem to matter, so we kept it the same. So please don't miss the first half hour. It'll be on your tickets if you buy them online. And, of course, we're putting it in all the publicity. But 7:30 curtain time, Fridays and Saturdays, 3 o'clock Sunday matinees. We open March 20th. It's coming up. And we're going to run it for 2 weekends, as we always do. And tickets at ltwb.org. That's littletheaterofwilkes-barre.org. Or if you're old school, call us on the phone, 570-823-1875. Just leave your name, when you want tickets, where do you want to sit, and we'll take care of you from there.
Now, David, you were showing me on your phone before we sat down some really eye-catching publicity photos. Will they be online?
Yes, we're trying to run one every day or as close as we can. And one of the things people remember Chorus Line for is the actors hold up headshots in front of them, and they're pictures of themselves, 8x10. So we've actually staged headshots with our photographer, Angel Berlain Mulcahy, who's excellent, where she photographed and made headshots for each of the actors as their character. So we're not only putting some of those photos of the fantastic choreo, but one by one, we're profiling our characters online too, and some of their quirky little facts from their background. So you'll see a whole lot of information on our Facebook page between now and then.
David Parmalee, General Manager of the Little Theatre of Wilkes-Barre, and Jordan Liparini, Stage Director, speaking with us about the upcoming production of A Chorus Line. Opening this weekend and running the following weekend, Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30, David Parmalee wants us to be sure we know it's a new start time. 7:30 is the time on Fridays and Saturdays, and Sunday matinees at 3:00. At the Little Theatre of Wilkes-Barre, that's 537 North Main Street, ltwb.org, ltwb.org, and Little Theatre, the theatre is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E. The shows are March 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and 27th through the 29th. Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30, Sundays at 3:00. For more information, ltwb.org.